In a few moments, you'll experience the live stream from LifePoint Church. I'm so glad that you're here to join us for that experience. At our church, our mission is to influence people to find and follow Jesus. We want to see people find Jesus, in other words, believe in him for their salvation. And then after that, we want to see those believers follow Christ in a life of wholehearted devotion. All of our energy and effort is put into serving you, helping you experience that. So maybe you're joining us from another part of the world or another state in the United States. We're glad that you're here. My encouragement to you would be wherever you are in the world, find a local body of believers to get involved with. Don't let this be your church alone. And then for those of you that are in our local area or maybe even part of our church family, perhaps some of you are on vacation or some of you have kids that are sick or for whatever reason you decided to stay in this weekend. And I would just invite you to consider not using our live stream as a substitute for the church experience. Make sure you're involved in community. We have the wonder of technology to take advantage of experiencing a service through computer and in our own homes, but that's not the church. I would invite you to come and be part of community. You can do that especially through small groups here at our church. I would invite you to get connected with people, share life together, be part of what God is doing in each other's lives. It's a very powerful thing. And then, of course, as you're watching via live stream, I would invite you to participate in the act of worship through giving. I would encourage you to go on to our website, lifepointchurch.us. There you can find a tab to click, and you can be a part of this experience through the giving of your gifts. My deepest prayer is that God would use the experience of this service to change you, to draw you closer to himself. I hope you enjoy this time together.
Well, good morning, LifePoint family. How are we doing? Good. Awesome. I'm so glad to be here with you. Everybody who's joining us in the video cafe or joining us from home across the interwebs, welcome as well. Well, we're in our next gen weekend, so every fifth weekend we try to carve out some time to build into families and build into those who are building into the next generation of Christ-like influencers. And today is also the third week of our summer-long series called Relatable. Now, all throughout the Bible, it's unmistakable that God designed us for relationship. In our lives, we feel this natural draw and this natural desire to be with other people, even if you're an introvert like me. But even though we have this natural draw and desire to be around other people, relationships aren't always easy. Am I right? Yeah. Tell me about it. People can be messy and relationships can be difficult to navigate and they can be confusing. And so in this series, we want to identify ways that we can increase our ability to relate well to one another, to increase the health of all of our relationships. In the first week of our series, our senior pastor, Joe Duke, he talked about comparison and how comparison can break down our relationships. Last week, Joe talked about encouragement, how encouragement actually builds in courage to other people, how encouragement builds the health of our relationships. And this week, I want to discuss kind of a key concept, a key practice to relating to other people well, to relating to each other well, and that is the art of showing up. Now, I don't know what brought you here today. Chances are any number of things led you to be in this room. And just like you, there are a lot of reasons that I'm in this room today. But as I look back at my life, there's one reason, one moment that stands out among all the rest. And that's the moment two people had the courage to show up in my life. Now, I haven't always lived in Maryland. I spent kind of the first half of my life in Wisconsin. I moved here when I was in high school. I think I have a photo of me in high school. Yeah. So that's my sister Nicole, my Graham. Yep, gotta love Graham. On the far right is my sister Rosalyn. And then, you know who that is in the middle there. Haven't aged a bit, have I? My goodness, repping Adidas like it was going out of style. 2 weeks before my junior year of high school, me, my sisters, my mom, and my dad, we moved from Milwaukee, Wisconsin to Columbia, Maryland. 2 weeks before my junior year of high school, as if high school isn't hard enough already, right? And as you can imagine, I mean, some of you are in your junior year already, but some of you can imagine that by junior year, friend groups are already pretty well established. I mean, people already have their people, and it's hard for an outsider, somebody that's new, to break in, especially somebody, I wasn't very outgoing. It's hard for me to make introductions. In class, I felt both invisible and exposed all at the same time. And then enter the cafeteria. The cafeteria is like the loneliest place in high school to begin with all its social politics and whatever. But I felt invisible and exposed, and I ate lunch alone day after day for months. I was all alone until one day I heard a voice from behind me. And that voice said, "Hey." Now, having had some experience being bullied before, I was pretty sure what I could expect if I were to turn around. Some sarcastic remark about my accent, because I'm from the Midwest and Midwesterners have weird Midwestern accents. If you're from the Midwest, you know. You know the struggle is real. Or maybe I get a sarcastic comment about my mom or my mom's accent or whatever. You know, like, kids are mean. We're mean. It's fine. Whatever. But the voice got louder and more insistent. "Hey, hey, hey." I could ignore the voice no longer. So I turned around slowly, preparing myself mentally for an attack. But instead of an attack, instead I got an invitation. You see, two students from my English class, Darren and Jamie, they invited me to eat lunch with them and their group of friends. And day after day, they kept inviting me to eat with them and their friends until one day they didn't have to invite me anymore because I was in their group. I was one of their people. But the invitations didn't stop there. Soon they invited me to their church youth group, and then they invited me to church, and then they invited me to be in their small group. And that small group was led by an amazing adult small group leader named Guy Bunyard. It was in that small group that I got a Bible. It was in that Bible that I met Jesus. And when I met Jesus, my life changed forever. My life changed forever because two high school students had the courage to show up in my life. If you're a high school student here today or a parent of a high school student today and you don't think that you can change the world, I'm here to tell you you're wrong. Two high school students had the courage to show up in my life, and my life changed forever. And those two students had the courage to show up in my life because an adult small group leader like Guy Bunyard, somebody like Guy Bunyard, had the courage to show up in their life. If I had to bet, I'd say that every life in this room and every life outside of this room has been changed by somebody who showed up in it. Every life is changed by somebody who shows up. Unfortunately, I'd also bet that every life in this room and every life outside of this room has been changed by somebody we expected to show up but didn't. Our lives are changed by the people who show up, but they're also changed by the people who didn't. You know, maybe it was a teacher or a coach who spent more time on another student or player than you. You know, I'd be in the Women's World Cup right now if they had just seen my potential. And I wasn't a man. You know, maybe it was a parent who wasn't around when you were a kid, or maybe a friend betrayed you, or a spouse left. I think the reason that we know showing up is so important is because we've felt the disappointment before from somebody we expected to be there for us, and they weren't. Or we know how important it is to show up in the lives of others because we wouldn't be the people that we are today if it wasn't for that other person, if it wasn't for Darren and Jamie, if it wasn't for Guy Bunyard, if it wasn't for fill in the blank. And there's an emotional reality that we have to contend with when we talk about showing up. You know, none of us can be available to all of us. We have a limited amount of energy and a limited amount of capacity. And that differs from person to person. You know, relationships go through seasons too. Right, so like Darren and Jamie, I don't have the same relationship with them as I did when I was in high school. You know, relationships can come and go and ebb and flow, and that's okay. You know, Jesus, he only had 12 friends, and only three of them were pretty close. You know, we all have a limit for how present we can be in everybody's life. And the way that we show up for our barista at Starbucks isn't the same way we show up for our kids. At least I hope not. Even though we don't have, you know, endless capacity, I do want to suggest that each of us has the ability to show up right where we are. You know, there are people in our lives right now that we can show up for, whether it's at work or home or school. And maybe some of us have some margin where it's like, you know, I want to build into the next generation. Or I want to volunteer at a soup kitchen, or I want to do something in the community. You know, I have a little bit extra, and I want to give back. I want to suggest that we all have an opportunity right where we are to show up. So how do we do that well? Before we get into the nuts and bolts and the mechanics of the whole thing, I think we need some common ground. What does showing up mean? Here's the actual definition of showing up. It means to be conspicuous or clearly visible. But I don't think that's enough. That's not really what we're talking about when we're talking about showing up. I think that we need to add something to this definition. So here's my working definition. If I were to talk to one of our small group leaders in student ministries, this is what I'd tell them that showing up is. It's to be conspicuous or clearly visible with the intent of influencing outcomes. To show up is to be conspicuous or clearly visible with the intent of influencing outcomes. It's not attendance like going to a concert or an Orioles game. Like you go to an Orioles game and you get on like the Jumbotron, right? Like you and Bay are on the Kiss Cam. I see you. Like you're more visible, but just because your visibility has increased, it doesn't mean that your influence over the outcome of the game has increased. Like you can't influence the outcome of the game just because you're on the Jumbotron. No, the only people who can influence the outcome of the game are the people who are skilled at playing the game and who show up on the field. Here at LifePoint Church, our mission is to influence people to find and follow Jesus. Influence, not control, not manipulate, but influence people to find and follow Jesus. But I don't think we can do that without being clearly visible. We need to make ourselves clearly visible in the lives of others. But if we're just clearly visible, well, it'll be great, but we won't see a lot of change. We make ourselves clearly visible with the intent of influencing outcomes. All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts a little bit. If you have a Bible, turn in your Bible to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 19. Luke's Gospel, chapter 19. Now, by the time we see Jesus here in Luke, chapter 19, I mean, his ministry is taking off. Word about him is spreading. He's trending on social media. And I hear a rumor that Netflix is going to do a documentary. If you're new to the Bible, I'm just kidding. Like, Netflix wasn't around when Jesus was around. No, you get it. You'd understand. Wherever he goes, wherever Jesus goes, I mean, people got like Bieber fever, right? Like crowds just swarm around Jesus. People are willing to go to great lengths just to get a glimpse of Jesus. And in Luke 19, we find the story of a man who's willing to do just that, who's willing to go to great lengths just to see Jesus. Let's read together. Well, I'll read and you can read in your head or whatever. Luke 19, verses 1 through 10. He being Jesus, entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hey, come down from that tree. Hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." A little presumptuous of Jesus. "Hey, I'm just going to invite myself over to your place." But no matter, Zacchaeus hurried down and came down and received Jesus joyfully. And when they saw it, when the crowd saw this, they all grumbled. "He's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." Does Jesus show up in Zacchaeus' life? Does he make himself clearly visible? "Hey, Zacchaeus, come on down off of that tree." Yeah, makes himself clearly visible. Does he influence an outcome in Zacchaeus' life? Now, I don't know what happens when Jesus goes into Zacchaeus' house. We don't get that in the text. But we do get a glimpse of the transformation. In a matter of hours, Zacchaeus' life is changed. Jesus absolutely influences an outcome in Zacchaeus' life. But there's an obstacle, something in the way that could have prevented Jesus from showing up in Zacchaeus' life. Zacchaeus is difficult to see. As the song goes, "Zacchaeus was a wee little man, a..." Yeah, wee little man was he. Well done. Some of you paid attention in Sunday school. I can smell the felt board already. Yeah. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. He was short and there was a crowd. Even if Zacchaeus gets himself up into that tree, he might be able to see Jesus better, but there's no guarantee that Jesus is going to see him. There's still a crowd of people. Zacchaeus is difficult to see, but he's not just difficult to see literally. I mean, Zacchaeus is difficult to see figuratively. So Zacchaeus, we're told by Luke, was a tax collector, chief tax collector, and he was rich. Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. Now, tax collectors at that time, I mean, Zacchaeus was a Jew working for the Roman government, and the Jews at that time, they saw the Romans as occupiers of their land. The Romans were oppressors. They were under Roman oppression. As a tax collector for the Roman government, it wasn't like Zacchaeus had just taken a job at the IRS. No, Zacchaeus was working for ISIS. And if that seems a little bit extreme, maybe, but it gives you a sense of how the crowd looked at Zacchaeus. When they looked at Zacchaeus, they saw treason. And while Zacchaeus was working for the enemy, he was also robbing his own people blind. You see, the Roman government, they didn't pay their tax collectors. Tax collectors didn't get rich through a cushy government salary. No, they got rich through extortion. So the Roman government, they'd say, "Okay, we want to collect, like, let's say 4% tax." I don't know what it really was, but let's say 4% of your income there, we're going to tax that. Well, the tax collectors, they would charge you 10% or 20% or 30%. And the Roman government didn't mind so much that they collected 10 or 20 or 30%, just as long as they got their 4%. And you might imagine that if they didn't get paid, that they would exact some kind of service fee. You know, like when you use your credit card and they take that like 0.5% or whatever. Like that seems reasonable. But these tax collectors, they would just take and take and take to the point where it was robbery. I mean, people were going bankrupt. People were thrown in prison. Not only was he working for the enemy, but he was robbing them blind. When people saw Zacchaeus, all they saw was betrayal. What's the word that they used to describe Zacchaeus? Luke tells us that when Jesus goes into Zacchaeus' house, they grumbled. So he's gone in to be the guest of a man who's a sinner. When the crowd saw Zacchaeus, man, all they could see was a sinner. They had reduced him to his lowest common denominator. They could only see the things that he had done. They couldn't see who he was. Have you ever felt like somebody did that to you, like they reduced you to your lowest common denominator? Maybe you made a mistake at work and now you can't get a promotion because of that one mistake. Maybe you made a mistake in class and now the teacher, well, they're not going to call on you, or they are going to call on you because of that one mistake. Maybe somebody has reduced you to your race or your gender or your sexual preference or your political affiliation. When deep down inside, you know, I am so much more than that. I have way more potential than you can see. Have you ever done that to somebody? I literally do it all the time. So when my wife and I, we first got married, we moved into an apartment down in Baltimore. And you know, you start to live together after we get married and we're trying to figure out each other's rhythm. So I have like my own rhythm and she has her rhythm and now they're coming together. And well, you know, sometimes there's going to be, well, some friction there. And the only fight that I can really remember after we got married was about a towel. Yeah, I'm high maintenance. Yeah, it's funny how we can fight about the silliest things. So, you know, I'm like an early riser. I'm up at like 5:30, and I have a routine. I get in the shower, and I get out, and I dry myself off. And so, you know, like I always have my towel like right there on the towel bar, like right outside the shower. And it would happen that on occasion, you know, my wife would take a shower, and she'd use the towel, and then on occasion, it wouldn't find its way back to the towel bar. So I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd take my shower, and I wouldn't check for a towel, because why would I? It's always there. I'd be cold and damp and towel-less. The injustice. And that's the thing, right? Because it's like it's just an inconvenience. But you know, as this went on, I stopped seeing it as just kind of a minor inconvenience, and I turned it into an injustice. When I looked at my beautiful bride, I couldn't see my beautiful bride anymore, who wouldn't leave me towel-less and damp in the morning. No, I could only see the person responsible for all my pain and suffering. Now, we've worked through it. Like, I mean, I've seen a counselor, and we're good now, you know? Like, we talked about it. We're fine. You guys don't need to worry about it. I mean, still pray for us, but, like, pray for my wife, because, like, she's the victim in the story, right? Like, it's not me. I'm not the victim. Just got to deal with my crazy. Man, I do that all the time to people. You know, somebody cuts me off in traffic, and I'll follow them down the you're not seeing my best side right now, but you know, like I'll follow him down and just, You know, there's a misunderstanding at work. And I mean, I work for a church now, so it's like, there's no misunderstandings. You guys just get along all the time. You know, sometimes there's misunderstandings and it's hard for me to see the person behind it. And you know, people at work, you know, sometimes they got stuff going on at home or stuff going on, you know, behind the scenes that we can't see. There's more going on than our disagreement. Man, it's so hard for me to see past that. It's easy for me to see people as a problem that needs to be solved instead of people that need to be loved. It's easy for me to see people as a problem that needs to be solved instead of a people that needs to be loved. Zacchaeus is difficult to see. Because of what he's done, Zacchaeus is difficult to see. You know, people do stuff to us and things happen, and they're not off the hook for that, right? Like, I had to have a conversation with my beautiful bride and say, hey, you know, like, this, she didn't know that it bothered me, and I had to talk to her about it. Zacchaeus did some dirt, man. Like, he did some gnarly stuff, and he's not off the hook for that. He needs to be held accountable. You know, there's people that we need to hold accountable, but if you're like me, man, it's not a big deal. I'll just push it off, and I won't confront, and I'm not very confrontational, and I'm an introvert, and I don't want to deal with all that drama. But I have to. Like, I have to enter into that if I want a deep relationship. You know, we can miss people. But I think what's so cool about Jesus is that he's able to see what's fundamentally true about Zacchaeus. Yes, he did some dirt, and yes, he's going to be held accountable. And I imagine there was a conversation in Zacchaeus' house about, hey, Zacchaeus, maybe you don't do some dirt anymore. Maybe you get your life together. But look at what happens. Look at what Jesus says about Zacchaeus. Luke 19, verses 9 and 10. Jesus says to Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. You know, the choices that Zacchaeus made, they weren't inconsequential. They had a real impact on people's lives. But it wasn't what was fundamentally true about Zacchaeus. Because the crowd saw a sinner, Jesus saw a son. The crowd could only see a sinner, but Jesus could still see a son of Abraham. Man, I feel like the same is true in my life. You know, I could easily be called any number of things, and have been. But man, where I see a screw up and where I see a sinner in my own life, Jesus sees a son. And the same holds for true. If it's going to be true for me, then it's got to be true for everybody else. When Jesus sees you, he sees a son and he sees a daughter. The thing that's fundamentally, unchangeably true about you. When Jesus sees us, he sees a son or a daughter, he sees a child. What Jesus does is, I think, the key to showing up well. There's a lot of ways that we can show up in the lives of other people, but here's the thing that Jesus does, and here's the key. Jesus keeps what's true in view. Jesus keeps what's true in view. The crowd sees a sinner, he sees a son. That's the thing that's not going to change about Zacchaeus, no matter what he does. You know, if I have a disagreement with my wife about towel maintenance, okay. If I have a disagreement with my wife about towel maintenance, I keep the truth in view that her intentions towards me are always good. Like, she's not scheming, okay, I'm going to make him really inconvenient today. Like, she has good intentions toward me, and maybe there's just a misunderstanding. Or if I have a disagreement with somebody at work, I try to keep in mind that, you know, we're both trying to get to the same place, even if we don't necessarily agree with how we're going to get there. We keep the truth in view that people are fundamentally, unchangeably created in God's image. Every single person is created in God's image, and Christ died for every single person, whether I like them or not. As I relate to people, I need to keep the truth in view that Christ died for them the same he died for me. We keep the truth in view. Keep what's true in view. Well, like, what's that thing about your spouse or your coworkers? What's that thing that's fundamentally true about your children, about your friends at school? We keep the truth in view. You know, I think that sight is powerful enough to change the world. I literally would not be here if it wasn't for two people seeing me. Zacchaeus' life was changed almost in an instant because Jesus saw him. In the Bible, this idea of sight is kind of, like, it's all throughout the Bible, this theme of sight. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, the prophet Samuel, he's like instructed by God to find Israel's new king. He's instructed to go to the house of Jesse. One of Jesse's sons is going to be king. Now David, his youngest son, will eventually be selected king, but only after Samuel goes to brother after brother after brother. And God tells Samuel, you know, I don't see the way that man sees, because man sees on the surface, but God sees at the heart. God sees the heart. In John chapter 9, we see Jesus giving the gift of sight to a blind man. But here in the Zacchaeus story, man, we see Jesus giving the gift of being seen. And how many people in our lives need the gift of being seen? You know, here at LifePoint, we want to influence people to find and follow Jesus. And if we need to be clearly visible in order for our influence to grow, you know, the thing that happened in my life and the thing I've seen happen in other people's lives is, you know, people notice those who notice them. People notice those who notice them. Like, I want a quick change and I want, like, you know, instant transformation. And I want to do that outside of relationship a lot of time. But people notice those who notice them. I have a friend, Andrew, who goes here. He has a vision for our church and for our world that we would become first-class noticers. Like Darren and Jamie, they noticed me sitting all alone at a table. Jesus noticed Zacchaeus all up in the tree, all by himself. That we would be first-class noticers. And I bet there's people in our lives that just need to be noticed. And when we notice people, they notice us. So how do we do that? You know, there's a lot of different ways, like I said, but here are kind of like three things I keep in mind when I think about, okay, I'm gonna show up well. The first is prayer. So if God sees, not as man sees, if man sees what's on the surface and God sees at the heart, well, God, I need your help. I need to be able to see like you see. And I think through deep listening prayer, I think God starts to reveal things about other people. Have you ever experienced that, like, in prayer? It takes time and it takes slowing down because, you know, we want to hear from God, but sometimes it just doesn't happen like that. So deep listening prayer, God, who do I need to see today? Who do I need to see like you see? Prayer is, man, it's such an incredible gateway to see other people the way that God sees them. The second is practice. Practice is a practice. So two things that I do. The first is naming. So if showing up is an art form, you know, we need to practice. We can't just paint Monet unless we're a savant, if we're trying, like, for the first time. And one of the things I do is I try to call people by name. You know, next time you go to Starbucks and you know, the barista's there, like, look at their name tag and then I just call them by name and say, you know, thank you, Patrice. Patrice, I don't know why Patrice, but thank you. You know, thank you. If you have a waiter or waitress at a restaurant, learn their name and then every time they come by, just call them by name. And here's the crazy thing is it doesn't happen every time, but about 90% of the time, when I do that, you just see people's shoulders relax. Like, there's something special about calling people by name. In the Bible, it's a huge theme. God calls people out by name because I think there's a lot of power in calling people by name. The second is encouragement. The second practice is encouragement. Joe talked a lot about it last week, and for me, it's probably one of the most important sermons that we've had here at LifePoint this year. Like, if you haven't listened, go back onto the website, lifepointchurch.us, and give it a listen. It's incredible. But encouragement requires sight. Have you ever had somebody encourage you and it was like they didn't really know what they were talking about and it just kind of fell flat? But have you had somebody like really encourage you? Like it was like they were looking into your soul, strumming my pain with his fingers. No? Okay. I just had a moment there. It's cool. But like that kind of encouragement that develops our vision, that requires us to have a vision of somebody. I mean, that kind of encouragement is powerful and it can change lives. And the last thing, number three, is patience. You know, relationships are messy. And I want transformation in my relationships the way that Jesus saw transformation in his relationship with Zacchaeus. I want it overnight. I want a couple hours and then boom, change. Talk to one of our small group leaders in student ministry. And they'll tell you what happens when you're patient. When you follow somebody from sixth grade all the way to eighth grade or from ninth grade all the way to 10th grade. Because you've been patient and you've had the late phone calls and text messages. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. To the point where it's like, yeah, I know where I'm going. I'm going to college or I'm going to start work and I, you know, kind of feel good about like where I'm going. The amount of transformation that you can see over a long period of time. You know, people want instant transformation in their marriage. But man, it just takes work and it takes time. I think we need patience when we show up. Practice patience when it comes to showing up. And know that you're not alone because relationships are messy for all of us. And we're all in it together. We're here to support each other. You know, if you're a high school student, I just want to encourage you, if you're looking for a place where, hey, I just need to be seen. I need somebody to show up in my life. Next week at the 11 o'clock service, we're starting a high school service down in the underground. It's in the basement. If you don't know where that is, the welcome desk, they can point you in the right direction. But we just want to create a place where high school students feel seen and known and heard and loved. My man. I just want to come over there and give you a hug, Brian. You're amazing. You know, there's lots of different ways that we can show up in somebody's life. And maybe you have a little bit of margin, you know, where you can show up in the life of a child or a student or maybe an adult. And so we have a website. On our website, we have kind of like a side website, side hustle, called LifePoint Church. It's lifepointchurch.us/lead. And if you go to that site and you want some more information about how do I show up in a child's life or a student's life or an adult's life, I want to consider leading a small group. Go to that page, click on, I want to lead a children's small group or student small group or adult small group. If you click on students, fill out some information. It'll get emailed to me. I'll email you. We'll set up coffee. We'll have some laughs. And we'll talk about students and how crazy it is. What happens when you show up in a student's life? But I'd love for you to consider showing up in a child's life or a student's life or another adult's life. Because when you lead a group, you change a life. And I am proof positive that when somebody like Guy Bunyard leads a group, he changes lives. I think we have students and children that could use you in their lives. Someone just like you. There's nobody else like you. I think they could use you in their lives. You know, whether you lead a small group or you're like, you know what, I'm going to show up well right where I'm at. In student ministries and here at our church, there's a question that I ask myself, and I just want to leave you with this question. You know, who's going to be here next when we show up now? Who's going to be here next because we showed up today? Because we had the courage to show up now. I'm in this room today because two people had the courage to show up in my life in high school. Who's going to be here tomorrow? I think the next generation is so worth investing in, because I cannot wait to see who's going to be here next, because we show up now. Guys, I'm excited. I think we have just an incredible opportunity to see people. I think just that alone can change the world. Let's get a vision for who's going to be here next, because we show up now. Let me pray. Dear God, thank you that you see us. That even when others may see us for our faults and our failures, you see us as sons and daughters. Would we give that gift of sight to other people? Would you give us the courage? Would you give us the vision to see people the way that you see people? Jesus, you change lives. And we're so thankful that you see each and every one of us. Thank you for giving us life through your life on the cross and your death on the cross. Jesus, we love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.